Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Author to Author podcast. I am your host, Pamela R. Haynes, award-winning author of two books called Loving the Brothers and Loving the Sisters. I interview independently published and traditionally published authors from around the globe. The Author to Author podcast is available on 20 plus streaming platforms and 6 radio stations, namely East London Radio, Mixcloud, Pantango Radio, UK246.com, Chalk Hill Community Radio, LWR Talk Radio, and the Sounds of My Life radio station. The podcast is sponsored by Dalgetty Herbal Teas. Use the discount code A2AS6 for 10% off your next Dalgetty tea order. In this week's episode, we are in the Spice Island of Grenada with prolific writer David Ambrose. Let's jump into his interview now. See you on the other side. Hello there, David. How are you and how are you doing?
Hi, Pamela. I'm doing fine. And thank you for having me on.
No problem at all. You sent the book to me in June. So thank you so much for gifting me 2 copies of your book that we're going to be discussing today, called That Time in Bogles. So I'm excited to have a discussion with you about that. First of all, tell my listeners where you're from. And have you always lived where you lived? And where are you based now?
All right, thank you. So, well, my name is David Ambrose. I write with the name D.E. Ambrose. I use my initials. And I am from Grenada, St. George's, Grenada. I'm an educator. And right now, I am at the T.A. Marischal Community College in Grenada. I've lived here all my life, in fact, except for 5 years when I traveled to the United States in the early 1990s to study. So I studied for 4 years, and then I worked at my alma mater for the 5th year. And that's Principia College in Elsa, Illinois. So I've written 4 books. And the book that you actually have, That Time in Bogles, is my second book. And I was really happy to be able to send the copies to you while I was passing through England in June. So I said, hey, this is my opportunity. I know we've been trying to get me on your podcast for a while. I guess the challenge was how to get the books, the signed books to you from Grenada. So I took the opportunity this time, last month.
Thank you. And thank you for that introduction. But I want to go right back to the beginning. First of all, I want to say thank you for putting a map in the book as well, because not many people know about Carriacou. But I know it's the sister island to Grenada. But tell me, how far apart are both of the islands?
All right. So Grenada is actually a tri-island state. So the mainland is Grenada, where I'm from and where I was born. Carriacou is the largest of all the Grenadine islands. St. Vincent owns most of the Grenadine islands. Grenada has a few. So Carriacou is the largest. And Carriacou is not too far from Grenada. It's north of Grenada, north of the island. And by plane, twin-engine plane, it takes 20 minutes from the mainland, the airport on the mainland, which is on the southern tip of Grenada, to Carriacou. By boat, most people travel by boat, by ferry. And if you've read chapter 1, you probably got an idea of what it felt like back in the day to travel by boat. But today we use fast ferry, and it takes 1.5 hours, probably 2 hours, to get to Carriacou from St. George's, Grenada. And St. George's lies on the southwestern coast of Grenada.
You said it was a tri-island. So what island makes up the third one?
Right. Oh, yes. So the third island is Petite Martinique. So there's Grenada, mainland, then Carriacou. And Petite Martinique is on the northeastern side of Carriacou. And it's a very small island, a few hundred inhabitants. And I'm trying to see I'm trying to remember how big it is, if it's even 500 acres. But it's not too big.
Is it possible to see the other two islands from Grenada?
Yes. So on the northern end of Grenada, in the parish of St. Patrick's, And even as you drive up the West Coast, we have a road network that carries people along the coastline, all around the island. So as you drive up north along the West Coast, you get to the parish of, well, from St. George is where I am right now, you go to the parish of St. John's and then St. Mark's. So from St. Mark's and into St. Patrick's, and on the eastern side into some parts of St. Andrew's, you could see Carriacou. Pity Martinique is not so easy to spot from the mainland. I think you have to be in the right spot in St. Andrew's on the eastern side of Grenada to see Pity Martinique. And I remember in maybe in the 1990s, I was somewhere deep inside the parish of St. Andrew's, which is Grenada's biggest parish on the eastern side. And I looked across at the ocean. I'm thinking, wait a minute, that's Pity Martinique over there, because it's very recognizable by its volcanic cone. So I saw that in the distance. I was so surprised to be able to see Pity Martinique from the mainland. And then there are also other little rocks and islets between Grenada and Carriacou, and also between Carriacou and Pity Martinique.
Yes, I visited Grenada quite some time ago now. Beautiful, beautiful islands, very, very green and colourful. And I do remember seeing an island from the beach, just the outline of an island beach. So that we're talking a good 5 years ago now. And I really would like to visit Grenada again. I think it's worthy of its name being called the Spice Island,
Spice
and
Island, yes.
my husband swears by the nutmeg oil for his back
For
pains
his
and
aches
knee
and
pains and
pains.
so on.
Yep.
So yes, it's a very, very beautiful place. But describe for me what the perfect day in Grenada is like for you.
Like I said, I'm an educator, so before this year, and at this time of the year, I would actually be on break, but I recently took office as associate dean of this school in the college. So the administrators, we have to hold the fort while the students and the rest of the faculty are on break. To me, a good day would be, getting up to a nice breakfast, probably going to the beach for the morning. Not too early. I'm not really a morning person, but to get to the beach early in the morning, that's to me, that's the best time, when the sun isn't too hot and you could just laze in the water, or even sit on the sand and look at everything around you. And I usually go to Grandon's Beach, which is on Grenada's southwestern coast, and it's probably Grenada's best beach. I think it's ranked in the world as well. But after that, going home and cooking, when my wife is here, she would cook. If it's during the week, I usually cook on weekend, and watch some sports on ESPN. And even while I'm doing that, things are happening in my head. So I don't write a lot. I actually write a lot, but I write a lot in my mind. So when I do sit, then I would just type away, and a few thousand words would just flow out. So sometimes I would do that, and then at night, watch more sports. If it's the sports season, it could be cricket, most likely basketball, sometimes football. Well, we call it football in the Caribbean and in England. And I also watch American football on Sundays, when the good games are on.
So you're very much into watching your sports and so on, and it sounds like an idyllic day to start the morning going to the beach and ending the day doing some writing and watching sports as well. But what happened, or why did you start writing in the first place?
I've always loved writing, actually. I could go back to my secondary school days when we had to write our little stories and essays for English A, English language. And I think perhaps going back to Form 2 of my secondary school days at the Grenada Boys Secondary School, I wrote something. I forgot what was the idea that the teacher gave to us. And she was blown away by my piece. So I'm thinking, huh, yes, I probably could get into this. So I got to college in the United States, and I studied foreign languages in college. And I started to write just stories. This was before the internet and so on was quite popular as it is today. So I'd write stories on paper, pen on paper, and just put that aside, save that somewhere. I can't find them now. I remember when I graduated from college, somebody asked me, "So what do you want to do after graduation? What would you like to do in life?" So I said to her, "I'd like to write a book." And the lady was shocked. She didn't expect me to say that. I think she probably expected me to say, "Go look for a job" or something like that. But that, to me, that was something I wanted to do, kind of like a bucket list. I even knew what name I was going to use for my first book. And many years later, in 2011, I started to write, actually write. I said, "Huh, time to write, man." So I sat at the computer and started typing away thousands of words, quite a number of chapters. And something that kind of propelled me or motivated me was the challenge that my students had at the time, and they still do. I teach communication studies, which involves a lot of writing. And I realized that the students don't like to read. So I thought maybe if they get something to read that they could relate to, then they'd love reading that. So that's why I decided then to really get to work writing a book. And so I got into my first book, White Spice, which is set in Grenada. So I thought, hey, if I set the story in Grenada, they should be able to relate to the language, the culture, the sights, everything like that that I put in the story. And I published White Spice in 2015. In fact, August is coming up, yeah, in August of 2015. So everybody loved it because they could relate to it. And then 3 years later, I got into That Time in Bogles. And then the following year, my third book, Zone One. And then last year, 2022, I delved into some children's writing, The Kayak Tourist. So that's my little journey there.
Well, first of all, I wanted to say congratulations on becoming assistant dean of the college.
Thank
And
you.
I was going to ask you, what languages do you speak?
I speak Spanish and French. I also speak some German, and I could say a little bit of Mandarin. I visited China some years ago, and so even right now, I'm finally getting into doing those international Chinese international language exams. So I'm up to level 3 now. So soon I'll be getting into your Chinese characters. Which is perhaps the most challenging part of learning that particular language.
So, how much do your studies, especially around languages, impact on your books and how you write your books?
I do make sure that there is an impact. In White Spice, for example, I threw in some Spanish terms. In Bogles, at that time in Bogles, I did not get into any particular foreign language, but given the nature of our Grenadian Creole English, we use English words and terms when we communicate, but the structure of the language itself is directly or literally French Creole. So it's like we're speaking French Creole in English. And so that was something I had to incorporate as I gave the characters in Bogles their own kayak lingo. And a kayak is somebody from Carriacou. And so you probably would see the word kayak a few times. So we're not referring to the little boat or canoe, but to the inhabitants of Carriacou.
Well, I'm glad you made that clear because you've signed the copies for me, and it does says "Welcome to Kayak Culture." And I was going to ask you what does that mean because the
Yes.
first thing that came to my mind was to do with sailing and kayaks and so on. But what you're saying is that Carriacou people from Carriacou are called kayaks.
Kayaks, correct. Yes. Of course, we could call them Carriacouans as well. But if you were to go to Carriacou and hear anyone boast about their nationality, their identity, you would often hear them say, "Oh, I's a kayak," or "me's a kayak" in their own kayak language. Yeah.
Well, I don't want to talk out the whole story that you sent me, the whole book that you sent me, but from what I've gathered, there are some clear differences between Grenada and Carriacou. Can you name a couple for me on how you found the culture quite different?
Yes, and I guess I'm fortunate in that I have one foot in each island. My mom is from Carriacou, while my dad is from mainland Grenada, and I was born here on the mainland. So I would visit Carriacou now and then, or my cousins would come down, In fact, I think I know my cousins from Karakou better than I know my cousins from Grenada. That's how close we are. But in terms of the differences, one thing that's noticeable is the way we speak. So the language or the vernacular is different. The slangs are different. Grenada is the state of Grenada is 133 square miles. That's the area. Yet you could detect the language differences in different parts of the state, and that's noticeably so between the mainland and Karakou. And I have students from Karakou in my classes, and I never have to ask them where they're from. Just after I hear them speak, I say, "Oh, okay, this person is from Karakou." The foods that we eat as well, and the diet in Karakou, the people. They use a lot of cassava and corn and things like that, and corn-based products. One food that is very popular in Karakou is kuku, and kuku is made from corn. And with your Bajan background, and I know you know the kuku very well. So when we were growing up, my mom would cook a lot of kuku. She would make a lot of kuku. And even right now, I don't want to eat kuku at all. I just ate that too much. And as a boy, I never really liked it, except in the next day or the day after it's cooked, if there are leftovers, you would slice it up and then we would fry it and eat it. So that was, I look forward to that. The people of Karakou also, they eat a lot of soup, or I guess some people could say drink, but in Grenada, perhaps in the Caribbean, you know, our soups are loaded. It's not just a watery something. You load it with breadfruit or potatoes or yam and things like that. So the Kayak eat a lot of soup and the Kayak eat a lot of porridge. So even growing up, I never understood why we had so much porridge, you know, breakfast or dinner. It didn't matter what the porridge was. And a lot of corn porridge, rice porridge, flour porridge. We got something called arrowroot. And arrowroot, I just knew it as some sort of powder. We got it out of St. Vincent's. So porridge made from that. And my mom would just make porridge all the time. In Grenada, we do tanya log nowadays, so that could be added to the list of foods under the category of porridge. But perhaps the biggest difference is the practice of the African heritage in Karakou. The big drum and the big drum dancing are huge. If you are to outside of Karakou, if you are to go to New York, where the Kayak community is huge, they still practice that. And in April of each year, there's a festival called the Maroon Festival. And in the Maroon Festival, there's a lot of drumming and dancing and things like that. And in almost every activity in Karakou, drums must be involved and drumming must be involved. Earlier this month, or maybe late last month, I think it was earlier this month, somebody launched a boat, a wooden sloop, and drumming and string band music had to be involved in weddings. In the book, I spoke about the stone feast, the tombstone feast, which is a celebration of the laying of the tomb and the headstone. So drumming has to be involved. You know, building a house, a lot of food and drumming must be involved. So there is that deep African connection in Karakou, also in Grenada, but it's much deeper in Karakou. So we often say in Grenada, hey, the most culturally aware, perhaps, part of Grenada is Karakou, with respect to observing our African heritage.
David, thank you for that. And I wanted to know, why is that the case? Why is it that kayaks from Karakou tend to hold on to more of their culture than Grenadians?
There's been quite a bit of discussion about that. I think one of the theories that's been thrown around and been discussed is the relative isolation of the island. You know, you have to cross water to get from the mainland to Karakou itself. For people to travel from outside of the state to get to Karakou, they would most likely have to get to Grenada and jump on a boat and get to Karakou. That is not something that people would necessarily do easily. That's a big factor, I think. So the island and its practices aren't polluted, so to speak, by cultures outside of Grenada. and even by the mainland. But right now, excuse me, a lot of Grenadians travel to Carriacou just to witness the cultural habits of the islanders, whether it's their Maroon Festival or the launching of a boat, something like that. A village Maroon, and with the village Maroons and Sarakas, that's where the entire village would come together and pool their resources to hold huge cookouts. We say cook, but huge cookouts. You see these massive pots. You could even bathe children in these pots with whether it's rice and kuku. And in Karaku, they will roll the rice and roll the kuku. So it's not just a pot of rice and you take a spoon and dish it into a plate. When you pick it up, it's actually a ball. So they will do that. And that's another difference between the two islands. And other types of foods that we call Saraka foods or even smoke foods. People from the mainland travel to to Karaku just to experience that because we don't really have that here on the mainland. But I was fortunate enough to have a mom who is kayak, and that's the only way she knew how to grow us. And so there was nothing like doing that as the Grenadians did. She just grew us how she knew how she grew up herself. And so our foods were a bit different from my friends' foods, you know. Sometimes the way the language that we heard, in fact, at home from my mom was different from a little different from the language that other people use, my other friends use. So sometimes mom would use words and would say, wait a minute, how come nobody else uses that word? Nowadays, more kayaks have traveled to Grenada to look for work and to live and so on. But I'm talking about the 70s and even the early 80s. And my book, Bogles, is set in 1982, I believe. So we're still talking early 80s when life was much, much simpler than it is today.
Thank you so much for that, David. And what you're saying sounds very similar to what my friends tell me, the differences between Trinidad and Tobago, for example. So the netball team in Tobago would always thrash the girls from Trinidad, because in Trinidad you have KFC, you've got other fast food outlets and all of that. But they would say when in Tobago, they grew up on ground provisions and were a lot stronger and a lot tougher. And that's very similar to what you're saying about the differences between culturally between the islands as well, where one is more commercialized than the other. And the West haven't yet influenced Carriacou as much as they have Grenada. So very similar to what I've been told about the islands. So now you have four books out, five
Four
books
books,
out.
yes, four.
Do you have one of them with you, especially that time in Bogle? And
So
are
I have,
you able
let me
to
show.
read a couple of paragraphs for me?
So I do have that time in Bogle, so I'll read a few paragraphs. This was my first
Thank you.
one. This is White Spice, of course, was my first
Spice.
one. So that time in Bogles, so just so the listeners would know, it's set on the island of Carriacou in the early 1980s. And at the time, a lot of people did not have the amenities that we take for granted today. Running water, electricity, well, forget about telephone, those kinds of utilities, well, no TV. But people really loved life and they enjoyed life. It was very laid back. And so the story follows a boy, Daniel, who travels from mainland Grenada to Carriacou to spend his Easter break with his cousins. And so his cousins are Elijah and Elisha, and they have a sister called Ruth. And they all live in the village of Bogles. And Bogles is located on the northwestern side, towards the northwestern side of Carriacou. And there's, as you stated earlier, there's even a map of Carriacou in the book. So I touch on a few things. There's a voyage to Carriacou where Daniel and his older cousin, his elder cousin, travel by boat. And back then, the boats would be powered by wind. So it took the entire day. They traveled north from Grenada. Then there's Bogle's village. I'm reading the chapters. There's a chapter on jogging water. It's a dry season story. So the villagers would have to go far to fetch water. And we use the word jogging when you're carrying stuff. Cricket in the road. Back then, you know, boys and girls too would play cricket in the road, on the beach, wherever, in the pasture. And perhaps that's one of the reasons why West Indies team was so strong there. Then you have stone feast preparation, talking about the tombstone feast. Then the stone feast itself. There's a chapter on kite. It's Easter time. Boys must fly kite. Then I put in a tale about wedding day. And farine. Farine is a cassava product. And we used to eat a lot of farine, put the farine in soups or tea. I don't like it in anything else. I would eat it dry with sugar. But it's supposed to be quite nutritious. And in fact, they've attributed the longevity of people in parts of Western Africa to eating cassava. Yeah, I wanted to read an excerpt from Cricket in the Road. Nowadays, people are wincing every time the West Indies team plays somebody. So here the boys are playing cricket. It's Daniel, Elisha, and Elijah. Let's see where I will start. A lively game of afternoon windball cricket in the road drew a rambunctious crowd of spectators. People sat on house steps or leaned against lampposts or walls to take in the entertainment. And this is on page 24. Most of the boys wanted to be the West Indies master batsman, Viv Richards. However, Daniel preferred to model the prolific wicket-taking fast bowler, Andy Roberts. The GBSS junior cricketer befuddled the bogus boys with his pace. Six times, his deliveries squeezed past batsmen to hit the wooden sweet drink case they tried to protect. That copa is Malcolm Marshall, a man declared. Daniel's nostrils flared, and he glared at the man. Andy Roberts, he muttered. Are you? That is my nephew. Daniel heard someone boast. He looked in the direction of the deep voice and recognized Tantan grinning from ear to ear. Four bottles of beer promptly appeared in front of his uncle. Let me get a bad day, a tall, thin man demanded, storming the pitch. I'll go show him who's boss here today. Elisha froze. Jack, look, Bamboo want to take advantage on Danny. What do you think? Elijah considered Bamboo, then looked at his brother. Well, let's see who go win. Daniel delivered the first ball and watched helplessly as Bamboo sent it high, back high over his head. The batsman strutted to the middle of the pitch, thumping his chest with one hand and raising the bat with the other. The boy grimaced. Tantan glowered at Bamboo and Stoops. Bamboo, you like too much zest, Daniel's uncle said. My nephew go out you just now. Daniel tried mixing up his deliveries, but the right-handed Bamboo covered his wicket well, driving the ball along the ground back to the bowler and lobbing it into Con Margaret's yard at long on. Some spectators cheered at the sight of Bogle's best batsman roughing up a Grenadian bowler. Even if it's you know, a Grenadian or a kayak, it doesn't matter if it's a boy, an adult, or a child. There is that rivalry that exists between people from both islands. You know, we want to see who's the better of the two. Even in this case, with Bamboo being an accomplished cricketer, batsman, an adult, and Daniel being a boy who plays school cricket. Well, it doesn't matter. One is Grenadian, one is kayak. So the kayak would most likely support their own, even if it's against a Grenadian. And eventually, maybe the other people in the crowd would say, hey, man, this man is not taking advantage. That's too much, you know?
Thank you so much for reading that for me. It is quite a gripping tale. But what happens next? You know, what future projects have you got coming up?
Well, I am in the process of doing a sequel for White Spice. White Spice is a crime thriller. It's crime fiction. And people love that one. People love a lot of people love Bogus actually. But I'm doing a crime, a sequel to White Spice. I wouldn't call it White Spice 2, obviously, but something else. And I'm also getting into some another cultural piece, not necessarily a sequel to That Time in Bogus, but still, I just like to promote the culture of Grenada and Caracou for the state, and by extension, the culture of the Caribbean. So, and you know all of the Caribbean titles, and I've seen that in Loving the Brothers as well, which I really enjoyed. I'm sorry I couldn't get it as an actual book. I had to get the Kindle edition. But what we see in our Caribbean stories, what we can't leave out, the cultural aspect, the music, and the food. We must have music and food in our Caribbean stories, and to me, that's important.
Thank you so much for reading Loving the Brothers. But it almost feels as though you're not just a lecturer, you're not just the associate dean, you're not just an author, but I also get a sense that you have responsibility for cultivating and the coming together of other Grenadian authors who are coming up. I follow you on social media, so I see some of the activities that you do. When did that start, and what do you do to promote other Grenadian writers?
That is so true. I am also one of the directors of a group called Grenadian Published Authors Inc. So some years ago, probably in 2017, I published White Spice in 2015. So at around 2016 or 17, about four of us authors would get together in a park in Grandin's on Fridays, every other Friday or so, and we just talk about what's happening on the scene, in the literary scene. What could we do to promote Canadian literature more and stuff like that? And excuse me, we spoke about hosting a book fair. We spoke about, things like visiting schools with our books and so on. And so in maybe in 2018 or 19, it suddenly dawned on me that we do have a number of Canadian authors in the country who live in the country, but we're not really seeing the work that they do. After a book launch, around the book launch, the book is quite popular. And then a few weeks after the book launch, you hardly hear anything again about the particular book or even the author. But I wasn't satisfied with just, having a book in bags and perhaps waiting for the occasional bazaar to participate and showcase and sell books. So I started using social media more to promote I think back then I had one book, my one book. And somebody said, "Man, only your book alone I seen, man. You're doing the most promotion here." So I'm thinking, "What are you talking about? Other people are promoting their books." And until I sat down one day and I looked at it and said, "But wait a minute, I'm really not seeing other people promoting. We can't just have our books in a box somewhere after spending so much money to publish and things like that, and to bring them into Grenada. A lot of us are self-published, so we have to import the books. And that costs a lot." So I started promoting my books more and then meeting with other authors to talk about what we could do. And sometime in November of 2018 or maybe early 2019, I think, we decided, "Hey, let's form a group, man. We probably have a bigger voice as a group than as any single author." And one of the things that we often discussed was the fact that none of our books or no Grenadian book is on the curriculum, the English literature curriculum for any school. So we're thinking, well, we need to approach the ministry and fix this. But as one person, it probably won't have as big an effect as you would have as a group. So last year, the group finally became incorporated as a nonprofit organization. And I'm sure you saw images where we had a launch, an official and public launch in June, this past June. In fact, Paul Kings Douglas surprised us when he came to the event. And he went, "Hey, Paul Kings Douglas, my idol. We grew up listening to his LPs." I think my mom probably still has his LP Tim Tim, and we listen to that over and over. But yeah, we just want to promote our literature to our people, our young people especially, get people to read more, get our students to read more, and also promote our literature outside of Grenada. What I've realized is that it's quite difficult to get literature from each Caribbean territory. Sometimes I would pick up someone on Kindle, but to get your book to Barbados or to get something from Antigua and so on. And each territory has, a really nice group of authors in terms of numbers and quality. I recently read one from a Kitishan lady, and I really enjoyed it. So I'm thinking, man, I need to get more Caribbean books. So a group like ours in Grenada would have a, I guess, a stronger voice and more power, so to speak, than any single author to do things like moving into the region and talking to bookstores to stock our books, even to bring in books to Grenada as a group, as an organization. And then if it's one person and we try that and everybody's doing their own thing, group power, so to speak.
I mean, that's absolutely fantastic. And it's the same reason why I joined the Black Writers Guild in the United Kingdom, because,
Nice.
one voice nobody really hears. But when they see a group of, 300 authors coming together, and expanding every year, they just had their conference last month and it was packed, and the sharing of ideas. You get to meet your f fellow Facebook author friends that you only have a Facebook or Instagram relationship with. You get to see them in person and meet them in person. I remember reading a book called The Space Between Black and White, and when I turned around, the author was sitting behind me. Another one wrote a book called Black Flamingo, and he's sitting in front of me. So it was such a creative space, but more importantly, they are driving the agenda forward in terms of, the big five publishing houses in the UK getting their voices heard and opening up spaces, because writing and publishing world, it could be quite insular. And when you have voices of 300, you can then let your voice be heard and let people know that you are here. After George Floyd happened, a lot of people were saying, well, where are these Black authors? Where are these Caribbean authors? We've always been here, So I am all for getting people together. So I'm excited to hear what's happening in Grenada and in St. Kitts also. If you can connect me with that author in St. Kitts, I'd love to interview her. For her book
I'll send you
as well.
her Instagram contact. That's where we, in fact, that's where you and I connected as well. So the power of
That's
social
exactly.
media.
That's right. That's right. So, if people wanted to get hold of you, how can they do that? What's your handles, social media handles?
My Instagram is at DE Ambrose. I do have a website. So in fact, when people go to my website, and then they could find the Amazon page, the direct and exact Amazon page for each book. So my website is deambrose.net. So I use my initials DE and then my last name. So no space between any of the letters and no full stops or no dots. deambrose.net. And I put information about activities that I may be involved in, a few photos and different things that I do. I use my own name for my Facebook page, and there is a Facebook page for White Spice and for That Time in Bogle's A Caracou Tale. Oh, my Twitter is at dambi, dambi01. So you can do a search for me on Twitter as well. I do have something on TikTok, David Ambrose 106 or something like that. But I'm not too hard to find. So I'm just getting into how you get into Twitter or you use Twitter effectively. posting content and things like that. So I'm still learning. There's a lot to learn.
Absolutely. I'm still the same. I'm new to TikTok, and I can't believe that there's been over 300 views of just my feet, with my trainers on walking down the road. It's absolutely crazy what people will view, what they would like to watch. Just before you go, you mentioned Paul Wilson and his book. He was asking me to connect you, so I was really glad to hear that that happened, that the two of you, his book is called Rocking the Boat, and
Paul,
it
you
was
said
really
Paul
good.
Wilson? Oh, Paul
That's right.
Wilson. Yes, I've heard of him. I haven't connected. Did we connect? I think I spoke to him once or twice on Facebook because he lived here at one time. I don't know if he's still in Grenada, but yes, I would like to connect with him. But the Paul I mentioned was actually Paul Keynes Douglas, the comedian. Yeah, the Caribbean storyteller and comedian Paul Keynes Douglas.
I see. Okay, two
That's
different
Paul.
people. But I'm glad that I was able to connect you with Paul Wilson. And hopefully there's some kind of collaboration that can happen at some stage.
Thank you for that. Yes, I don't know if he had launched his book in Grenada yet. I'm trying to think. I don't think so. But he did tell me when he was about to publish.
Okay, thank you so much for spending this time with me.
Thank you for having me.
And talking about your books and your publishing journey. I suppose we will look out for your new books as and when they come online. And perhaps we can have you back next year for you to talk about your new publications.
Definitely, definitely. I'm so happy that we were able to, connect. I know we've been trying to do this for a while, like I mentioned earlier, and it's finally happened. So thank you so much for accommodating me and giving me the opportunity to share and to read from that time in Bogle. I was so pleasantly surprised, in fact, that quite a number of people in the UK bought copies of this one. When England toured the West Indies last year, they played a match in Grenada, and I had a table at this stadium with other arts and crafts people. And a number of them bought copies. They said it was just small enough so that they could take them with them when they fly back. And after that, I was pleasantly surprised to see that sales shot up in the UK. And I'm thinking, word of mouth is perhaps the best marketing tool. So perhaps they love the story and shared with their friends. So even sometimes when I do events here, different bazaars, and we get visitors from the UK, and they will check, they'll think, I've seen this book somewhere. Where have I seen this? They've never been to Grenada, but they saw it somewhere. And so this is one story I think that people, a lot of people in the UK love. And I'm so grateful for that we could share the culture of our people, the people of Grenada, the people of Carrick in this case.
And isn't that remarkable that you can be in Grenada doing your bit and having impact across the globe where people are getting hold of your book and finding out firsthand about Grenadian culture? I just think it's absolutely amazing that that's possible. I mean, when you said to me that you read Loving the Brothers, I mean, it gave me goosebumps that someone in Grenada took the time to download the book, the Kindle, and to read it. And I think you left me a review as well about how Black people live and what they do and activities that they get up to in London. I was blown away by that. So thank you. Thank you very much.
No
And thank you
problem.
so
No
much
problem.
for participating on the Author to Author podcast. Bye
My
for now.
pleasure. Bye-bye. Okay, thank you.
I hope you enjoyed my interview with David Ambrose. It is competition time now, and the question is, what subject does David teach? Is it A, social studies, B, media studies, or C, communication studies? Contact me on Instagram at lovingtheauthor with the correct answer by this Friday for your chance to win a copy of his book, That Time in Bogles, A Carrickoo Tale. Good luck, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye for now.